Our next guest has figured out something most content creators are still struggling with: how to turn that terrifying red recording light into your best friend. And she's been perfecting this magic in front of college students who could scroll on TikTok instead of paying attention. Today, you'll meet Tatiana Rodriguez, the award-winning Rutgers adjunct professor who's cracked that code on camera confidence and proving that the best creators don't just make content, they create connections. So welcome to Dealcasters, Tatiana Rodriguez. Thank you for coming on. We've been looking forward to this one.
What a warm introduction. Thank you. I have to say, it's very nice to hear all these nice things being said about you. And by the way, I grew up with brothers. So you guys, with your jokes and your insights, I'm like, this feels like family to me.
That's right.
Being around my brothers. Love it.
That's right. I say it's my love language. You know, Jim and I bust each other's chops all the time. It's just, you know, a lot of people are like, hey, you guys really don't get along at all, do you? And I'm like, no, we just decide we're just going to do a podcast together.
We just spend as much time as we can together because we do not like each other.
Exactly. Tatiana Rodriguez, this is, I love to have guests on like you, not just because you're a quote unquote content creator, but you're also a college professor. And I love learning things from people that are sort of maybe outside of your Venn diagram, right? Of how can I learn from someone who is, coaching, wealth advisors, or how can I learn from a gamer, or how can I learn all of these things? Because we're all kind of content creators now, especially when 2020 hit. We all were firing up cameras and microphones and trying to learn how to do this thing. And still there's a lot of people that look like they're in witness protection, and they sound like they're in an echo chamber, and we can count their nose hairs, and they still don't quite have it together. But you teach this to college students, who could literally scroll TikTok instead of listening and hanging on to your every word. So you have to have your act together because their attention spans are going like this.
Yeah.
Talk to us about what are content creators missing that you bring as an adjunct college professor at Rutgers to this mix?
Absolutely.
How do you hold their attention, I guess?
I want to start by saying there are some things I see educators that they get right, and some things that they don't get right, just like I see it with content creators. But like you just said, learning from people outside of our industry is also something that I am a huge fan of. You mentioned gamers, and my mind is like, I can learn from kids. I can learn from my nieces and nephews. I can learn from other educators in K through 12. I can learn from a person in the business world. We just are continuously learning from others. So I want to directly address what you just said. But first, if I could have you guys back on screen for 1 second, I want to share the moment that I first met Jim Fuse. Now, unfortunately, you don't see him, right?
Jim, what are you doing?
Witness protection.
But he just, exactly. You talk about witness protection. This is him right back there. But
nice.
We were part of the same team. We were part of the same team at Ecamm Creator Camp. And so I just wanted to mention, he told me about his show. He talked about the things that he does with his partner. And so Chris and Jim, that's my way of saying thank you for having me on the show today. It's a pleasure to talk about these things that we're talking about. How do we keep attention? I mean, first of all, all of us feel like we all need to up our game. This is a big conversation in education too. I think where educators, I'm going to start with educators, where educators get it a bit wrong is staying stuck in old thinking patterns. You know, when I was growing up, and maybe when you guys were growing up, because we might be about the same generation, I'm 48, you guys may be a little younger, but growing up, it was about sitting and listening. Like, we must sit and listen. And I had a teacher. She actually was the principal of our school, and she was a nun. And I say was because, she's passed away. And she was awesome. And I know that sometimes people have negative experiences mm-hmm. with certain types of schooling and with nuns, and I respect that. I had a fabulous experience, and she was such a huge influence, and she loved to play the guitar. You know, for her, she was awesome into music. I didn't get that gifting, but really loved her. She taught me so much. And the thing is, I perhaps don't remember everything she taught me, but about, you know, content or about lessons or the classroom. But like Maya Angelou says, it was the way she made me feel. Oh, It was the way she understood me. It was the way she cared about me. And I will say that is the number. If you hear nothing that I say today, in the beginning of every semester, I ask my students to fill out some questions. Another professor, again, we teach and learn from each other. Another professor gave me this activity called Getting to Know You. And so one of the questions in this Getting to Know You activity is, the best teachers are the ones who, and then all students fill in those blanks. It is always, hands down, the number one answer from all students every semester that I've ever taught, saying, the ones who care about their students. You know, and these are people 18 to 22. And I would bet my life that the answer does not change based on age. I bet that every single one of us wants to know that our educators, and the truth is that as content creators, you are probably educating, if not most of the time, at least part of the time.
Yeah.
I know that there are some content creators where the main purpose is straight up entertainment, and it's just about being funny. It's not necessarily informational. But a lot of us, when we're creating content, are teaching. And none of us make content to be forgotten. Nobody says, let me make a great video, let me make a great YouTube channel, or host this session because I want everybody to forget what I'm saying. So starting with caring about your people, and I feel like most people do care. Most people care about delivering great content, but in order to have that come across to our audience, we have to be ready to show them that we care. It's not enough to care. We have to show them that we care. Our audience, our people have to know that we care about them. So there's a couple of things. There's like, and I'll ask you guys this question. Does your audience know that you care about them? And based on your answer, the next question is, how do they know that? So let me ask you guys. Does your audience know that you care about them?
God, I hope so.
Right.
I think generally, yeah, because the feedback that we do get, right? So in this world, you know, not a lot of times will you get that feedback unless you actually solicit it, right? You in some form of survey or asking questions or engaging, you know, trying to do some online engagement. But the comments that we do get, you know, are, I started my podcast, you know, after your show because I bought this microphone and these two pairs of headphones because you told me to get one or the other based on comfort. So, you know, I think generally people feel like we care that they, you know, get going and get past the mind junk of creating content mm-hmm. and actually start doing it and get better at it, as opposed to us trying to get money, which I feel a lot of people feel like YouTubers, content creators are just out there trying to be shills, trying to get, you know, whatever the money is. So I couldn't say wholeheartedly yes. So maybe I should be taking more of your courses to try to get me to care more about what I
Well, and I think, yeah.
Jim,
well,
did you want to add anything?
I think some of it though too is because we live stream and, you know, people don't always watch you at the time you're going live. The people that engage with us, I definitely feel like there's that connection, and we help them, and you know, we enjoy their company and we recognize them. But it's kind of like the after the show, it's like, did somebody watch it, right? We have the lurkers. And so, I mean, I guess I'd say the fact that our channel keeps growing, that's a positive thing. We get a lot of great comments on our YouTube videos of stuff where we've helped people. So I think, you know, we respond to them. So I think they see that from that perspective, we care. Of course, you know, you always have your trolls, which can be fun. But yeah, I think we do. We probably could do better. You know, that's an interesting perspective from being a creator standpoint of like, how do we show that we care more? And maybe that's where Substack helps us do that, because it's got some tools that we can use there that you can't necessarily do on other channels.
We'll get right back to the show, but first I wanted to tell you about the School of Podcasting, the number one place to learn about podcasting, brought to you by the amazing podcast Hall of Famer, Dave Jackson. I'm a member, and it's a fantastic place for podcast courses, a super helpful podcast community, and unlimited, that's right, unlimited podcast coaching. The link to check it out is here in the show notes, or you can head on over to sop.dealcasters.live and tell Dave that Dealcaster sent you. Now back to the show.
How do we find out if someone cares?
Well, I'll tell you guys this. You definitely care. And it definitely comes across. I mean, you mentioned a few things. And one of the first things that stood out is the humility from both of you that, hey, maybe we could do better. How could we find out about this? You know, so you're already saying the kinds of things that caring people say. Mm. So number one, you talked about perspective taking, putting yourselves in the shoes of your audience. How does this fit? How is this comfortable? Giving them ideas, helping them to solve their problems. These are all ways to show our people that we care. Plus humor. We do not laugh with people we don't like. And when the people who are on the stage, the instructors, the co-hosts, whoever, the teachers, whoever they are, when they enjoy themselves, when they enjoy their time together, the people watching feel that too. Mm. And that's another way of saying, hey, we care enough about each other to do this together, to have a good time, to bring you a good perspective. That translates into we care about you too. And it is, of course, based on the language that you use, which if you guys were to say, use ChatGPT to input some of your transcripts and say, please give me examples of ways that we're showing that we care about our audience, you would come up with tons and tons and tons and tons of things. Because maybe subconsciously,
yeah,
you're doing so many great things to show them. I mean, the whole point of the show is to help your audience. So already, that's a great way to show your audience that you care. But you're doing a great job at it. And I hope that you both can feel really proud of not just the humor and the help, but also the heart behind all of it, all that you bring to the audience. So number one takeaway from today is, don't just care. Think about and show your audience that you care. Oh, so draw a nice little heart on screen there for that. We need to show people that we care. That's number one.
Okay.
No crying, Chris.
You're like the best teacher ever. Seriously, it's like, you know, we get so locked into this podcast thing where it's like interview, host, guest, host, guest, host, guest. And Tatiana just flipped the table around, right? And like not only, you know, served us, thank you, by the way, but all, you know, serve the audience who's watching. And speaking of the audience watching, we want to pop in because a friend of the show, Katie Brinkley, is in the house.
Hi, Katie.
Hey. Katie is watching over on Amazon. So she's listening. She's listening because we said dealcasters.live, and you can go and get The Social Shift from Katie Brinkley while you're over there too.
Awesome.
And speaking of listening, Tatiana, you just like, you listened to what we said, like stuff we said in the intro, stuff we said when we were asking you questions, and you're calling that back. That active listening, how important is it for you, not just as a professor, but as a content creator, or as students or as viewers, to be active listening? And how important is that in what you do?
I think, of course, I know you guys are going to agree with me. It's extremely important listening. Being a part of that conversation, present-minded, is important. And it's not always been easy for me to listen because I am guilty and have been guilty most of my upbringing of being so into the conversation and so excited that I'm actually processing my response while the other person is talking.
Oh,
so that was a principle I learned years and years ago. And we talk about it in my leadership class too. From Stephen Covey, you know, the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, that old book that like everybody has, and most people haven't fully read yet.
Yeah.
I've actually read it. I've actually read it, because just like anything, if I want to learn something, I'm like, if I teach it, I will learn it. So I will go teach it, because it's important. But one of the principles is to, you know, we need to listen without getting our reply ready.
Yeah.
Listen to understand. Not a lot of us. And I think it doesn't come from a bad place. It's not from selfishness. It's from, oh my gosh, I'm so excited to participate in this and to connect, that I'm already like, I'm going to say this. Oh, this connects to that. I'm going to share my story and what I learned. I mentioned I have brothers. I'm also the oldest, right?
Oh.
And the oldest only girl. And there's only 3 years between the four of us. So my parents had 4 kids in 3 years. And there's a set of twins in there too.
Jeez.
So, you know, we're growing up. We're all back to back. I feel a million years older than them, even though I'm only 1 year older than my brother. And then, you know, he's only 2 years older than the twins. But I feel like I'm a million years older, and I feel in charge. Okay. I have been in charge. I'm used to being in charge. But one of the lessons my youngest sibling taught me is that it's not what you say, it's how you say it. Like, I can be right, but it doesn't matter if I don't deliver that in a way that's helpful to the listener, to the learner, to the audience member, whoever it is. We have to consider, who are we talking to? And how do we say it in a way that's helpful? So for me, content creation, teaching, the active listening means I have a plan. I mean, I always say to my students, I am the pilot of this plane. That is true. Right, I'm the one who's taking us to our destination. I'm the driver. My experience as the pilot is not the only one whose experience matters on this plane. Right, the people in the seats, they get served. They're paying for a service. They're paying for their university education or the course online, or they're paying with their time and with their attention, even though our content on YouTube is mostly free. You know, there is an exchange of something that they are contributing, and their experience really matters. How will we know unless we listen if their experience is a positive one? So asking and listening are huge ways that we help build that care, but also that experience. Because at the end of the day, it's not just about creating a class for me. It's not just about getting through the content of a book or a lesson. That's a part of it. The content is a huge part of it. But beyond that, 10 years from now, are they going to remember a specific term? Maybe. There's a very slim chance they will, though. What they will remember is the value. What they will remember is, you know, when I was experiencing that rough patch, she gave me a little extra time because I went to her. I do hold my students accountable to it. I've had hard conversations with them, but I always tell them, I'm a reasonable person. We can work out almost anything if you talk about it with me in advance. So I know that that's a different dynamic than most people on, you know, creating content. You're not necessarily having to have accountability conversations with people. But I bring that up because that's how I show that I'm listening. Maybe sometimes that means saying a hard truth to your audience of things that they struggle with. You know, our friend for Ecamm, Doc, is always saying hard things.
Yeah, he is.
And, you know, and I think it comes from a place of love. You know, I consider him like a big brother, the big brother I never had. I wish I had.
Yep.
And I do think that he has a big heart when he says, but it can be hard to hear for some people.
Yeah.
But sometimes that is a way of showing that we care. I do think it's important to meet people where they're at. And there's a saying that I haven't forgotten, that people can only meet us as far as they've been willing to meet themselves. And we don't know that about people unless we find out. So for me, it's about asking my students a lot of questions to see where they're at. Some of them will be anonymous, but we can do that via polls, via anonymous things. Sometimes, and I don't just mean like heavy stuff. Sometimes we're just asking for fun. Outside of school, where can you be found? If it's not at school or at work, where are you? And then we get so many insightful things. People will say things like baking, growing plants, all these unique, interesting things that make the person who they're gaming or particular game or, you know, whatever the things that they're into, because we have to help people get to know each other in that way first, because once you build the connection, then it's easier for that content to flow through. So showing that you care, creating excellent content, but first building connections, I think is a way to create a better experience for our audience, you know, whoever they are. Maybe they're our students, maybe they're both, maybe they're your YouTube audience or your live stream audience, and then you want to build a course from that. So they will become your students in some ways too. But whatever it is, caring, connection, content. I think those things are really important. Tatiana, you brought up something
and I think it's very important. And, you know, and I know you also talk about leadership, but one of the things you hit on that I think is so important is that people have different learning styles, and even the way they react to how you approach them. Like Chris and I may learn completely different. You could yell at me and I'll do something, but if you yell at Chris, you'll like shut him down. And not to say that you yell as a teacher, but as a teacher, how do you deal with kind of that mix of, you know, if you want to call it learning modalities?
Yeah, a couple of things. People, there is a kind of a, what do you call it when you need to debunk a, not a myth exactly, but something that was believed to be true is that people have learning styles. That's not really true. What is true is that people have learning preferences.
Yeah.
Right? We prefer auditory content, or we prefer visual content, or we prefer kinesthetic with our hands. So everybody has preferences. It doesn't mean that's how they're going to learn best. In fact, what has been proven to be true is all of us need different ways, different modalities in order to learn best, which for me means I need to hear it, I need to see it, and then I need to do it. I need all of it. And that's all of us, when we get exposure to all of those things, will learn better. A person can have a preference. It doesn't mean that that's going to help them become better at the thing or learn the skill, the task, the concept better by having it in their preferred style. So I just wanted to address, what does it mean to have a learning preference versus a true learning style? But then, Jim, what you're saying is about individual personalities, individual things when it comes, and I, your example is great. You know, one of my brothers was in the military and did personal training for a very long time. His style is militant, and he has helped thousands of people get stronger, get better. For me, that's demotivating. That doesn't work with me. We're exercising one Thanksgiving break, and he comes up to me at the gym and says, I saw you doing your workout over there, and I'm thinking I'm going to get some reward here. I'm thinking I'm getting a little dopamine right now. He saw that I was working hard, and he goes, that's not enough. I know you can do much better than that. And to me, that was like, wah, 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 wah. It just doesn't work. But just because it doesn't work for me, right, doesn't mean it doesn't work for others.
Yeah.
Because it has worked. It does work successfully for other people. My way, I need a gentler approach. I need a, hey, great job. Like, you know, if I'm working out with somebody else who says, well, I saw you did 10. You think you could do 10 more? I bet you can do at least 5 more.
Yep.
I'll be like, all right, let me try. Mm-hmm. Let me try. That it's just like it's saying the same thing in a different way, but it's about acknowledging my contribution first. Like, I need to feel appreciated, and then the motivation comes. So to answer your question, and I am kind of chatty, so I know I can talk a lot.
Bring me back in
if I fly off the rails here, but okay, good. So we're good. So when I think about different personalities, I tell my students, first of all, I start off in the early part of the semester and I say, look, you can't just learn from me. You can't. I'm going to give you my very best this semester, but I can't please everybody. You know that expression. I'm not a taco. I can't please everybody. I'm going to give it my best. My particular style, my personality, which it's like this warm, but still accountable. Like there's some things that are non-negotiable, but I'm very kind. Mm. But I'm still the big sister kind of a role, you know, like, why are you late? We need to talk about this. kind of a thing. But also, hey, I understand. So I've got some built-in flexibility with the course. You can miss one entire class and it will still not affect your attendance because life happens. I'm reasonable. But I'll tell them, you have to help me get to know you. There's only one of me. Let me know how I can help make this a better experience for you. I've had students who have something called letters of accommodation, which is when a student has a learning need that falls outside of the typical things. Like an example could be dyslexia or needing more time on certain assignments because of certain ways of processing information, right? There's an infinite possibility of things, or a student with autism. So I did have a student who, you know, he played sports. He was in one of my classes and he kind of was like embarrassed to come talk to me, but he was like, please don't make me read out loud on the spot. And I said, okay, you know, talk to me about that. And he's like, you know, I have dyslexia. It's just, if I have a heads up, I can do it, but I just can't do it on the spot. Like I'm here, I'm participating. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Thank you for letting me know. Number one, I appreciate that. I would never want to have you feel embarrassed. But okay, what can I do to help you make this a better experience then? And he was like, that's the first time anybody asked me that. And it was like a compliment he was giving me, but it also was a little bit sad at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, because he's had more negative than positive experiences around that. And you know, you may not be in the classroom, but you still got people who learn differently in different ways. I think first we have to accept that we're not going to be able to provide personalized experiences to everybody.
Right.
But we can ask how I can make it better for you.
We'll get right back to the show, but first I wanted to tell you about Social Media News Live. Jeff C. and his amazing guests will keep you up to date on what's happening in this entire changing world of social media. They talk with industry experts and innovators and creators about the latest social media news, tips, and tactics, and they broadcast live so you can ask the questions that matter most to you and your business. Jim and I love this show, and we know that you will too. Head over to socialmedianewslive.com. Hey, tell them Deal Caster sent you. Now back to the show.
And you can show that you care enough to ask the question. And like, how is this for us? We call it, you know, we do assessments throughout the semester where we're asking, how's this course going for you? So some of them are informal, or where if a student comes to me and chats for a one-on-one for something, I'll take advantage of that moment and say, thank you for the conversation today. By the way, how's class going for you? What are your thoughts here? What have been your big takeaways so far? It's not me fishing for compliments, but it's me keeping a pulse on things and making sure they're having a good experience in this class. And I'll flat out ask, like, what's been some of the most fun moments for you so far? Or what's been a fun moment for you in class so far? How are you finding the material? Just anything to find out how things are going for them, not just assuming things are going great because they feel pretty great to me. So doing those kinds of little pulse checks with our audience is going to be important too. And we have so many great tools at our disposal digitally to be able to do it. Like if, for example, tonight, if we were fully on one platform, like in Zoom or on YouTube, I could have used Streamalive polls to help. But I know you guys are in many different places and the tool is not there yet to be able to cater to many different places.
Okay, that was my question. I was going to get nerdy on Streamalive with you earlier. I think you can connect it with Restream, but across multi-streams, it doesn't work. But it is a fantastic tool.
It really is. And I love using it in class. I also use Kahoot with my, because I love variety. Like we need a toolkit. But Streamalive definitely is my preferred method because students never have to leave the platform. They don't click on anything else. Yeah. They stay right. So if we're in Zoom, they reply right in Zoom chat. They don't have to open up any more tabs and their responses count. And it's just a great way to give voice, polling tools, writing tools, even to commenting on YouTube is a great way to give voice to people who otherwise might feel disconnected.
Right.
So, you know, we have our textrovert friends too, who are in, if we were in person, they consider themselves introverts and they're not going to be the first person to speak. But tools like StreamAlive or Kahoot or Mentimeter or Slido or Poll Everywhere all make it accessible for everybody to give us an answer. It's so easy.
Yeah.
You know, pick one. You don't have to pick what I pick, but you know, you certainly can. But pick something, even if it's, I have a question in the chat for you. And hear from them. Hear, listen and hear from them. I think that again, I feel like I keep coming back to show them that you care, to make me and care enough about their experience, what they're looking for to create great content and to provide opportunities for connection.
Speaking of caring, I think that works absolutely fantastically. You wanted to share something with us about something going on in your life.
Good segue, Jim.
Yes, I have a very special announcement. Good things. I had shared with you guys, I'm in the middle of a move and setting up the house and like so many crazy things. But, and you know, Jim, you had a chance to meet my partner in real life back in a Ecamm Creator Camp last year when we were there. And I just want to let you guys know that he and I are getting married this summer. So I spent a lot of time designing the invitation and our wedding website and everything. So I just wanted to share, I made it on Canva.
Oh, the Knot's awesome.
I used the Knot. If anybody needs a recommendation for maybe you're getting married.
Yep.
Oh, we did the Knot, and they have a free, you can make your free wedding website and do an RSVP. So yeah, I wanted to share with you guys that significant part of my life right now.
Congratulations.
And I'm just bringing a little.
That is so awesome. And we get to see the bestest smile, according to Tanya Smith, on the internet.
Tanya, she's so sweet.
That's amazing. And Ben is my youngest son's name. So like kudos to Ben for having an awesome name.
I'll tell his parents you said that.
All right, back on the rails. I wanted to talk about this because we spent a lot of time talking about the classroom, and my squirrel brain is always thinking about content creation as it relates to this. And so, you know, a lot of times you have people that listen to your show or that watch your show, and you don't even know it until one day. You'll meet somebody at a conference and they'll say, oh, you know, that episode you guys did with Mark Savant and you guys talked about how he used this thing and it helped him do this thing. And I'm thinking to myself, we did that show 2 years ago. Like how, I didn't even know you. And like all of a sudden you're telling me about an episode that you watched or listened to. So there's lots of people that are lurkers. There's lots of people that are sort of out there. They're just not ready to kind of let you know stuff. And there's things like surveys, which you can do on PodPage, which we haven't done yet, which we're thinking about doing. But a lot of times, Tatiana, you could make yourself open to feedback and say, hey, how could I be doing better here? You know, and asking your students this and trying to cater to as many needs as possible. How do you do that without not watering down what you do, but to continue to be as impactful as you can be? Because if you're, you know, all things to everyone, are you really as impactful as you could be?
No. And I'll tell you, for my own personal life, my current YouTube channel is about helping college educators create dynamic, memorable content for students that the students will love and remember and enjoy. Before my YouTube channel, before that, I was trying to teach communication skills to planet Earth. I was trying to make public speaking classes for the planet. That should have been the title, public speaking classes for the planet. And it was too much. It's too broad. It's too big. I didn't know who I was talking to. It made it just too difficult to create content because it was for everybody. And you know, that marketing thing, if your content is for everybody, then truly it's for nobody. Yeah. And I do agree with that. I know that there are exceptions to every rule, but in my case, that was very much true. And guess what? I was exhausted because I was making content for who exactly? Mm.
We'll get right back to the show, but first I wanted to tell you about Stream Like a Boss with the amazing Tanya Smith. Whether you're a coach, consultant, or creator, Tanya's got that magic to turn your live streaming skills into a powerful lead generation engine, transforming those chirping crickets into cash-paying clients with a revolutionary boss framework. The link to check it out is here in the show notes, or you can head on over to streamlikeaboss.tv. Hey, and tell Tanya that Dealcaster sent you. Now back to the show.
And so having a new direction, and again, you cannot please everybody. You know, and it's the people who are showing up. And if you follow the 80-20 rule, it's probably, you know, 20% of the people who provide you with 80% of meaning, of significance, of content. So in my case, though, it really was important to create pillars. So I know there are five things that I talk about. Mm. And if it's outside of those five things, it's just not for me because I can't talk about everything. You know, I mean, so the four things is like, I talk about active learning. I talk about technology. I talk about media. And I talk about creating a sense of community and belonging in the classroom. The fifth one is self-care, because I believe, you know, everybody needs to share how they take good care of themselves. So those are the five things I talk about. Those are the five things on my channel that I'm going to, does it fit in one of those five? And then of course there's like behind the scenes stuff and sharing tidbits of, like, and I'll be sharing about the wedding over the summer, but it will obviously be, you know, personal lifestyle things because it's a really big thing in my life.
Sure.
But I'm making the connections. You know, I shared it with my students at the end of, I shared the news with my students at the end of May, in May, because I want to celebrate with them. I want them to know what I'm doing this summer. That makes me a real person. And I cannot tell you how many students would say to me, I just love that we get to learn a little bit more about you outside of the content. And not everybody's going to want that. I'm sure if I surveyed all the students, they're like, I don't need to know anything about her life. Not that I don't care, but I'm just focused on the content. But that's individual. But so many people value that. And I'm willing to be open about many things. Like, you know, my classes are not therapy. It's not my counseling. That's separate. I talk to my counselor separately. But I'm a person. When things happen, I share it with them. And guess what? I teach public speaking. I'm going to be writing some vows. I'm going to be scared out of my mind. I have to process, even though I'll get up on a stage to 2,000 people tomorrow and talk about active learning, talk about the science of memorability. No problem. You want to talk about habituation? You want to talk about engagement? I'm so there. I've got to now profess my love, the deepest, most beautiful love I felt. And I got to write some vows. Oh, just thinking about it, I get crazy. So you think my students aren't going to be in that position one day?
Yeah.
They're going to be nervous and scared out of mind writing emotional content. So I'm already thinking, man, I've got to document my journey because that's going to be an important thing to share with my students. And they're never going to forget it. Now, I don't fabricate events just to have emotional impact.
Right.
But that's another key point, is we have to talk about emotions. And if I can share this screen, emotion is the on-off switch for learning. And Dr. Allison Posey, she was a speaker at a recent, just in May that I was at, and I got a chance to meet her and have dinner, and she's an excellent educational neuroscientist. So I want to make sure I say this. Emotion is the on-off switch for learning, and that is a quote from her. Actually, let me put it so you guys can see the whole thing. There we go. I want to misquote that. But we have to think about this. Mm. And of course, it's appropriate emotion. Do you know? Like, it's, again, it's none of this is counseling, unless your show is actually about counseling, then that's obviously a bit different. But we're all still people. And in order for your content to be memorable, people have to feel that emotional connection to it, which means you have to feel an emotional connection to it, and you have to be willing to share your emotions. And then the other principle that I wanted to share with you is about meaning. And this is that students engage. Let me just move it over so we can see it better. Students engage when learning is relevant to their lives, identities, and goals. And this is Dr. Tracy Addy, who is the director of the Teaching Institute at my university, whom I have a professional crush on her. She's amazing. She's wonderful. I love her. And, you know, these are the things that she talks about and she studies. She studies so many wonderful things from a student-centered perspective. And so we have to think about both of these concepts, emotion in learning, as well as, are we making this stuff relevant to our people? Are we tying it back to the lives, which, you know, as hosts, guys, this is partly your job.
That's
too.
Right. Yeah.
It's my job to make sure I bring the content, but also for you to be like, how does what Tatiana's saying relate to our people?
Yep.
So bringing it back. It's no different being an educator than being a content creator, because we're still dealing with people. We're dealing with topics, and we need to prepare good content, think about our audience, and connect with them. Keep them engaged. People are people, whether they're in my public speaking class or on your show. To me, it doesn't matter if they're 18 or 48. I mean, it matters. We're going to use different examples, right? Like, I'll say to my students, if I came to class and all I did was talk about how important strengthening your muscles is when you're older in life at my age, that doesn't connect with them. I mean, I can certainly say that once, but I need to be talking about what's life like at the end of your college years? What comes next? That's what they're interested in hearing. They're interested in hearing about their perspective, their lives, their meaning. So we have to continuously be making sure that we're doing that. And one of the ways that we can help our audience learn and remember is thinking about this concept of scaffolding. So, you know, you guys know what scaffolding is, right? In a building. Mm-hmm. So there's scaffolding in education as well. And I want you guys to think about this for content. So everybody listening, ask yourself, is my content scaffolded? Meaning, am I trying to give steps 1 through 10 on one show? I want to encourage you to break it up. Step one, let that be one episode. Let step two be another episode. Let step three be different. So you scaffold it, which means you're putting in these tools in place so that you can safely rebuild the building, right? Scaffolds are what they use in construction during repairs, during renovation, during building. You put these things in for safety so that you can go one step at a time. While we're doing this, then we get ready for this thing. So we need to do the same thing on our shows. Scaffold it. Plus, it also gives you more content. I think one of the mistakes we make as like in our classes, we break it up into a semester. I know I'm going to be with them 14 times for 3 hours every week.
Yep.
So we break it up and we plan it out. Okay, week one, I'm going to be teaching these lessons. I have this much time. They need to get breaks. Week two, and I want to encourage you to think more like an educator in this regard by thinking, okay, episode one is going to be this. How does that relate to two? Because when I teach class number two, I'm also talking about class number one and how it connects. So scaffolding is going to be an important strategy for content creators to use that we use a lot in education. And one of the ways that becomes real in my class is their first big assignment is an audio podcast. I have them focus only on the voice. I want them to learn to think about team chem. They do it in small groups. So like the three of us would be a group. We've just been assigned to create a podcast and we get a broad topic. We get to narrow it down. We get to name our show. We get to create the graphics. We get to, and the reason it's scaffolded is I choose focus only on the audio, not on everything. There's no video. There's no nonverbal communication. They're only focusing on the verbal side because that comes later. So we can do the same thing with our content creation. Let's think, okay, this part first, then I teach them something else, and then they can do that part later.
Yeah.
So I scaffold the assignments in class to build on each other, just like a scaffold, right? It builds on each other, builds. It helps the workers build that building safely and have this great process to do that. Rather than overwhelming my students in the beginning, you have to think about verbal communication, technology, nonverbal communication, thinking about your content, thinking about citing your sources, thinking about doing your research. Oh, and don't forget, y'all have to act like you're having fun. So there's all these different pieces. It's just too much to learn at once.
Yeah.
Too much. And the benefit of scaffolding is too, it gives you so much content over time and you're not so overwhelmed because, you know, that comes later. I don't have to do everything right now. So I'm curious, what do you guys think about the concept of scaffolding your content? And I'm guessing you probably already do this because you build shows off the other or you tie them back as well.
Well, for this show, this show's about as unscaffolded as, if that's even a thing, as possible. And the reason is, Tatiana, is like, we like to have interesting conversations with various people. We have a lane for sure. There's no doubt about it. But it's not like we're going to say, okay, we're going to do a 10-part series on how to do a video podcast. Now, we could, and that would be helpful for sure, but this show is about what you're seeing right here, which is, you know, having conversations with interesting people like Tatiana Rodriguez and, you know, creating great content that can help those folks. Now, the people that I work with at Cast Ahead, absolutely. In fact, that's what we do with one of my, it is built, like, you, if you don't have a foundation and something that you can refer to on episode 10 and say, now you remember we talked about on episode 7, this, this, and this, and this, don't forget this. And you're pulling people back. It becomes this more evergreen thing. And I think it's important for what you're talking about is, if everybody tries to boil the ocean at once, learn how to do an entire video podcast and all the production and all of that stuff, they're going to quit. It's not going to be something that's fun, and nobody wants to hear or see someone who is not having fun doing it and trying to figure out, oh my gosh, do I have eye contact? Am I looking at the chat? Am I doing all of these things? No, let's focus on something like this building block. And yeah, then we'll get to that.
I used to teach
eventually
workshops on Facebook at a community college, and I had to get them to agree to allow me to split it up because, you know, sure, I'd have 3 hours, but 3 hours was like not enough time. So I was like, look, we need to have like a beginner, intermediate, advanced workshops, multiple workshops, because to your point, you will overwhelm the person that's
Absolutely.
Being taught, and then did they really get anything out of it? So it's like, give them small victories. And I think even as we start thinking about how we create content, whether like on Substack, as I'm doing more, it's like, okay, if I'm going to teach people about how to stay away from the nose hairs, maybe the first thing is like the most important thing, right? That we all know in video is audio. So let's talk about audio first. And then we'll talk about the cameras. Then we'll talk about framing. And so those are all parts of that scaffold, I think.
And you said something else too. And I think it's important for us, and because you guys are talking about like the different, I would call them like personas that show up online, and I have them too. Sometimes I have students and I'm like, this is like, you need to show up. I need to see you. This is literally about speaking and you showing up. And I see this much of the person, or I call them sometimes fanboys because all I see is that they're a fan moving in the back.
Fanboys. I'm going to use that.
Or fangirls, you know, whatever.
Or their
fan
cameras
people,
off.
But it's like all I see.
They turn, they show.
No, cameras on. Their cameras are on. But all I see is their fan, because, and I understand. Imagine you're on a laptop. You want to see this. You angle the screen so that you can see it, not so that you can be seen. So I understand. Like, and we talk about this, but it's like, guys, I need to actually see you. So it's a joke, you know, and it's a frustration. Like, I'm fortunate that my class is, I need to see you because that's part of the skill development, you know? But we have to be prepared to do things visually. Now, you know, I love Ecamm. You guys are in the Ecamm community as well. So our tool of choice is Ecamm, but there are other options. But when we ask questions of our audience, sometimes it's like, it's really important that we show them, not just say things. So for example, this is one way of asking visual questions this is literally something I ask in my classes. Which one is most like you when thinking about delivering a speech? So if I were to say to you, you know, Jim and Chris, you're going to deliver a speech tomorrow on, pick your topic, let's go with co-hosting and team chemistry. How is it that people can develop team chemistry as a team of two when they're co-hosting a show? Is it one, you're so excited. This is like, your body's going to be grooving to it. Two, are you a little more relaxed? It's kind of it's a good experience for you. You're not too overly stressed. Is it like, oh, I can take it or leave it? It's a bit meh for me personally. Or does it make you start dripping sweat? Like, oh my gosh, panic mode is ensuing. Or are you at full five where just kill me now? This feels like I'm in an ocean and I'm about to crash. I can't stand this. Let me know, guys. Are you 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5? And if we're all on Zoom on camera, I'll have them, I'll have this slide up and I'll say, show me with your hands 1 through 5, which one is you? That gets their body participating, or if they're in person, right? Show me with your hands 1 through 5. You're a 1. Okay. You guys would be so pumped to talk about that.
Beautiful. I'm number one. For those who are just listening on the audio podcast, if there was ever a show where you need to go to watch the video, this is the one, because the visuals that Tatiana is sharing are amazing. Just the memes and the GIFs alone are worth you jumping over to YouTube and absorbing, you know, and very nicely done. I didn't think you could get more intense than that Key and Peele GIF. But number 5 was super intense. That is just killer to be able to do that, because that was, you actually answered one of the questions that I was going to ask, is like, you know, how do you get somebody over that precipice, you know, where they're just like, I know this is a show and I'm absolutely nervous, but if you can just like hold up a finger or hold up 5 fingers or whatever you need to hold up in front of somebody, that's a nice little, that could be a monstrous step for some people, right?
Definitely. And we have to remember, people want to participate. Now, in the world of YouTube, there are people who are in passive listening mode, and that's okay. If I'm driving, I need to be in passive listening mode. But most people, if they come to a live stream, they're coming to participate. There will always be some that are not. But, you know, we have to be able to have people ready and willing to come and pay attention. We have to break patterns. Like, if you guys have heard other people talk about this, you know the concept. We need to interrupt the pattern so people don't get bored. So I'll switch it up in class like this. You know, I'll start writing on the screen, which I don't have great handwriting, but there's something soothing about drawing on a screen and having people listen to you and understand different concepts like this.
We're going to get right back to the show, but first I wanted to introduce you to the amazing Cloudlifter CL1 from Cloud Microphones. This amazing little blue box boosts your dynamic podcast mic signal for pristine audio quality in just seconds. Jim and I love ours, and you can snag one of these CL1s or new Cloudlifter Xs for yourself from the links in the show notes below. Elevate your audio content with the Cloudlifter. Now back to the show.
It's a little bit different. I mean, back in our day, wow, PowerPoint, like, this is magic. Now it's like, kill me now, another PowerPoint. I can't take this. I can't stand this. So we need to be continuously evolving and using the tools at our disposal. And not just for the entertainment factor, because to be honest with you, if you share great stories, and I know that you've had other guests talk about this content before, and we talk about it in my classes as well, the power of a great story, the power of emotion, the power of connection. Honestly, all this beautiful technology can go away if you have a person who really cares and is great at telling a story and asks you a question. But the key thing is that people can't just be in passive mode in your audience. We have to switch it to active learning mode, because people don't join a team to sit on the bench. You know, people want to be participating. I mean, when I join live streams and people say, oh, look, hey, Tatiana, thanks for being here. Like you guys did in the beginning, you gave some shout outs, you said some names. People enjoy that, and that they feel seen, they feel heard. And that feels very nice to be acknowledged. So you want to make sure that in your live streams, in your content, even if, you know, think about the people who are going to be watching later. I think one time in the show so far, I've said to everybody listening, we can say things like that. We can say things like, hey, you know, whether you're listening in your car or you're here in the live stream now, or you're watching this later, thank you for your time. Thank you for your attention. I hope that this has served you in some way. Like, think about all the people who are here. You as the guest, the co-hosts that invited you, the people who are watching it live on whatever platforms, and acknowledge that. And then also the people who could be watching this in the future. So we want to make sure that we're giving them prompts, giving them cues. Listen to this question. You know, so wherever you are right now, stop and think about your own show. What's one thing that you heard today that you can implement right away? Think about that for a few seconds. Pause the recording if you need to. Like, talk to them directly. It just helps make that experience feel real to them rather than like, okay, I'm just a bystander paying attention to something.
Much more participatory as opposed to just, you know, spectating. And yeah, it's so important. It's like, it's so difficult to do. It really is. It's not, I know for you, you've been doing it for a while, but it is incredibly difficult to get people kind of come on, you know, like, you know, it's like pulling somebody out of their seat to come up and join you on stage. A lot of times some people are just not into it. And so I think these are some really tactical ways of being able to do that. And I know this guy, it's got my squirrel brain heated up and trying to figure out how to get, you know, that, you know, that passive listener, that passive viewer to be, you know, involved a little bit more. I know Stream Alive is going to be in the stack soon. Jim and I kind of talked about how we're going to do that. We've been toying around with that. And I know you got a lot of fun tools to talk about, none of which we were able to get to today, which is we've got somebody that wants to know where you're from. This is Lena, and I'm not sure, Lena, who you're talking about, but we're just all going to tell you where we're from. Tatiana, ladies first.
Okay, well, I was raised in New Jersey. Now I live in Pennsylvania, so the East Coast of the United States.
Wow.
But I was actually born in Costa Rica.
There you go.
So.
Lieutenant Colonel James
Hughes. Surprise, trivia question. You know, remember that for future trivia.
I was born in Indiana, grew up in Virginia, and then I now live, after a Marine Corps career all over the world, I now live in Marietta, Georgia. So, not too far from you.
I am from Detroit, Michigan, and I moved to Nashville to go to college. And now I reside in Atlanta, Georgia. And Lena, I believe that's a heart.
A rose.
I hope it is. My vision.
Rose? Might be a rose.
Oh, it's a rose. That's a rose. Okay. Okay. I don't know what the kids are doing now with these emojis, but in any event, Tatiana, this has been amazing. I have one last question for you that I'm dying to ask you. So if there is someone that's listening right now, or watching right now, it might be Lena, it might be Katie, it might be, you know, Matthew, it might be whomever, and they're absolutely terrified to hit record and record a video right now. And it could be for anything. It could be for a project, it could be for a podcast. They know they need to, but they're absolutely terrified. What is like the first baby step that you would recommend that person do? You know, that would help them with that first video?
The first thing that I talk about in my classes, well, you know, just because we're I know we don't have tons of time to spend on this, but I would also recommend you check out the other conversations I've had where I talk about fear extensively and what to do. I mean, if you go to my YouTube channel and you go to guest appearances, I have talked extensively about fear. Like, you can listen to all that. So just plugging that as an additional resource. But the very first step is to be very compassionate with yourself about experiencing it, because it's completely, completely normal to feel fearful. Mm. However, we quickly have to step away from the place of thinking of fear as something that has to hold you back. Because people, my students always say, when I ask them what they want to be more confident. Everybody wants to be more confident. It's the number one thing students want when they're in my classes. And that will happen. But what the myth I try to dispel very quickly is that fear is not the opposite of confident. Mm. It's not like, I'm going to get rid of my fear and now I'm confident. That's not how it works. I feel fear. I don't let that stop me. I take action anyway. And that's how I get confidence. It's not the absence of fear. It's taking action even when I'm afraid. That's how we build confidence.
Ugh.
right? And I have to be very honest, the fear may never go away, but it doesn't have to stop you. It just does not have to stop you. I think the big mistake we think is, I'm afraid, so I can't do it. It's like, no, you're afraid because you're a human being. You're afraid because you care about what you do. You're afraid because you're not sure about the technology. So getting clear on the reasons for the fear is important. I will bet money it's probably because you have a fear of being judged negatively, like we all do. Because we don't have a fear of being judged. Because when somebody likes us, that's still a judgment.
Yeah.
It's just not a negative one, right? So, like, oh yeah, please judge me positively, like my stuff.
You're right.
But keeping in mind that fear is not the obstacle, it's information.
Yeah.
Fear gives us information and we can identify what those fears are. We can use like Tim Ferriss's method of, okay, so if that were to happen, what would I do? Okay, so my worst fear is that I'll make a mistake and I'll freeze. I'll blank out. I won't know what to say. Okay, so let's talk about that. What are some things we can do if we blank out? What are some things we can do if we make a mistake? And then, of course, once we get to the logical place of it, people understand the things that we fear are simply not going to happen. I mean, you know, I talk about some of my content about an emotional hijacking that happens. And that's when we feel afraid, when we feel angry, we feel sad, you know, like our mind looks like me in this picture. It's like, it thinks we're going to be devoured, attacked, or that. And it's just not the truth. That's just not the way that things work. You know, we will have this inner critic that wants to be horrible to us, or we're horrible to ourselves. And that's just not the way that it works. So it's important to understand that we feel before we think because of the way information hits our brain. So, you know, this is just a few tidbits for you to think about. There's logic behind it. There's science behind it, but we are not powerless against this stuff. We have the ability to stop, hold that thought captive, and think about it, because we are not our thoughts. There's a famous quote, and I say this all the time because I love it and it's so powerful. I think it was Albert Einstein, but I'm not 100% sure. And the quote is something along the lines of, it is the mark of an educated mind to be able to entertain someone else's thought without making it your own. So we can see these things, hear these things, get some feedback, and be like, my favorite thing to do is say, is this truth or is this trash? Truth or trash? Truth, the answer is truth, I need to do something about it. There's even if there's partial truth to it, sometimes feedback from a student might be a little hard to hear, but their experience is valid and I need to work on that. You know, yeah, I think the assignment instructions could have been a little clearer on that. That's kind of vague. Or a beginner wouldn't understand this as well as I think. Sometimes the comment is not fair. Sometimes the comment is, no, that is trash. That is straight up trash. I have to understand that my brain processes it a certain way, but that is not true. I have never been disrespectful to a student. That is just straight up trash. That's somebody who's pissed off at me for a different reason.
Yeah.
You know, just or whatever the scenario is. So those are some of my tips to start working on those fear-based thinking.
Never before on Dealcasters have I ever asked one question and got an entire masterclass as an answer. I think truth or trash needs to be a game show, like right now.
And I agree with you, and I have made it a part of, I don't know if I have it in a place where I could find it super quickly, but I have made graphics that accompany the truth or trash concept. But
oh, really?
We'll save that for another time. Yeah.
This has been amazing, Tatiana. Absolutely smashed expectations. We knew this was going to be an awesome show, but thank you so much for making our show better, taking the time and delivering amazing. I know I've got a ton out of this. This is one of those ones, Jim, where I'm going to have to go back, transcribe, watch and listen again. So, oh, wait, I have to edit this. So, yeah, I get to do that anyway. But, you know, maybe
you
a little more active listening than just... There's a difference, Tatiana, between active listening and edit listening. You know, it's sort of, you know.
Yeah, I do a lot of my own editing, so I feel you.
Yeah. But honestly, thank you so much for this, Tatiana. We absolutely appreciate you joining. And of course, congratulations to you and Ben.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And if I can say a summary point here is that we're not just sharing information. We're not just teaching. We're not just entertaining. We are designing memorable experiences. So think of it that way. Design memorable experiences, make them relevant to your audience because they will remember it. They'll be interested in it if it's relevant. And then if you establish emotional connections, that will have meaning for them. And also remember to enjoy. This needs to be fun for both us in the lead as the pilots of the plane, as well as for the people in the seats. And, you know, we have a really good example with Jim and Chris and their interaction. We can see the fun, we can see the banter, we can see the joy. That makes it enjoyable to watch. And so I only wish I was funnier, guys, and that we could do a little trio
Chris
thing
is the funny
here. But
one.
Unfortunately, I'm just not that funny.
You
so
are
I just
funny.
I appreciate humor in other people very much.
I'm funny looking, but you are absolutely funny and you are awesome. Thank you so much, Tatiana. And for those of you who are still watching, including Neil Faramund, thank you for joining us here at the last minute.
Hey,
go back to replay, my friend. I'm kidding. And
I
for
love
everyone
Neil.
Else.
He's a great guy.
Yes, he is. Absolutely. And
thank you, everybody.
Thank you. And as always, don't fear the gear.
Thanks for listening to Dealcasters. Congratulations, you've taken another step forward in your content creation journey. Please don't forget to hit the subscribe or follow button here in your favorite podcast player so you can be reminded every time we drop an episode.
We love hearing from our listeners and viewers. And if you're wanting to watch our shows live on Amazon, feel free to follow Dealcasters Live as well at dealcasters.live. Follow us on Twitter or subscribe to our YouTube channel, where we also included added content that you cannot find anywhere else.
If you have questions about this episode or have something you want us to review, you can also email us at dealcasters@dealcasters.live. Thanks again for listening, and you know the deal. Don't fear the gear.